It's 8:08. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Joining us now on the phone from Mountain Trails Foundation, Director Charlie Sturgis. Hi, Charlie.
How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks. So basically, we've got the mud report.
Yeah, the mud report's pretty simple. I would say the skiing is far better than the trail riding and running at this point, although excursions to Moab seem completely appropriate as well. So I think there's choices out there. But I have been impressed with the skiing. It's been a very good midwinter powder skiing lately. So certainly a fun thing to go do. Hey, a couple things quickly, and I know you had a question about some e-bikes in City Council. Do you want to just let people know we have our May Membership Madness kind of month coming up here? So we'll be starting to be out in the coffee shops, and certainly we have our Trails Open House at the end of the month that is put on at the Doubletree with the help of Epic Promise and a bunch of organizations, and we'll get more info out on that. And, of course, you've been talking with Heinrich a little bit about the Young Rider Bike Swap coming up, which is, of course, another important event in Park City and a great time to get rid of your bike or buy a new bike. So those couple things are around the corner for us, as well as the coal swap following that. Now, you had a question, though, you said about e-bikes.
Yeah. Apparently, Andy Bierman brought it up at City Council last night, calling it basically the new off-leash dog issue with e-bikes on trails. So what do you know about that?
We're seeing, and I'm getting a few more emails about people that are probably definitely violating the sort of the e-bike etiquette or actually the e-bike ordinance. You know, the general pitch, I guess, the general position Mountain Trails is taking on this, and I think the city is taking it as well, is that we think e-bikes are a great transportation alternative, and you're going to see them, of course, out at the Kimball Junction, and they're going to be hubs around town where you can actually use e-bikes instead of your car. It makes great sense. It's actually a lot of fun. But we're really trying to keep e-bikes in total off of anything that resembles a single track. There are some soft surface areas that are legit, like the transportation corridors that, like you see on McLeod Creek. But, you know, e-bikes, like so many different things we might do out there, different sports we might participate in, is a proper time and place. And one of the places e-bikes are certainly still allowed on a reasonably regular basis is forest surface and BLM lands. So, you know, there are places. It's not like there's no place to go ride an e-bike. It's just that in Park City, on trails, it is not an acceptable practice. And certainly it changes any number of issues in terms of safety, closing speeds. We certainly see issues with the idea of safety with an e-bike in the hands of maybe a less capable rider. Yes, we're trying to make sure that e-bikes are not gaining access to the trail system, for sure. In any other case where, you know, you're talking about transportation and leaving your car at home, we're certainly in support of that. Hopefully that answers the question.
Yeah, well, so what is it that you're hearing from those who are contacting you about people on single track on e-bikes? Is it they're going too fast? I mean, is that their concern, or is it just because, you know, it's like they've got an e-bike, they shouldn't be here? Because I think there are some legitimate uses to that. I mean, and I'm going to say, you know, for the 75-year-old that I know that likes to go ride his bike on trails. But you know what? In order to be able to do that, he needs a little electric assistance.
Yeah, you know, I'm not far off from that either. And I completely support that in the long run. You know, we have talked, not at length, but is there a tag system, like a handicap tag system, that you might want to find where e-bikes are acceptable, have an acceptable use on a trail, or maybe somebody with an impairment, someone who's gotten older? Certainly, I know a couple of older gentlemen who I would never tell to get off the trails. They've been here for a long time. They still love riding, and the fact that they're out there is really cool. I think it's perfect. And like I said, you know, at 65, I can see that 75 horizon, you know, around the corner and go, whoa, maybe I need an e-bike then. So But I think, you know, our big concern is e-bikes go faster than normal traffic. They also can be in the hands of less experienced people. And then there's probably the idea that, hey, someone's just blowing by me while I'm actually being legit and pedaling. And I know I rode in Bentonville last year for the IMBA Summit, and e-bikes were a big conversation. A lot of people talking about, you know, gaining access for e-bikes. But while we were out riding in on their trail system, any number of e-bikes kind of blew by us, and it's kind of put a different spin on things, I guess I would say. And maybe it's a spin that you get used to in the long run, maybe not. But I think for the moment, to try to keep what is already a congested trail system and a trail system that has enough maybe conflict in the uses due to the intensity of the uses, that maybe e-bikes are not a perfect addition for the Park City trail system. And like I said, we're surrounded by a lot of public land. You don't have to go very far into Uintas to find some great trails and some great old roads to go explore on. And certainly down in Moab and out in Vernal and all these areas where there's a lot of BLM land, it's a great place to take your e-bike.
Okay. Maybe we can talk directional trails next week.
You got a deal. That's always enough. That's another one right there with Unleashed Dogs. Yeah, you betcha.
Okay. Charlie, thanks.
Thanks, Leslie. Have a good weekend.
KPCW News Time now, 8:15. Well, the annual U.S. News and World Report's high school rankings are out, and for the first time in a bit, Park City High School back on the list. In the studio with details, high school principal Bob O'Connor. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so the good news is that we're ranked number 2 in Utah, considered a gold school, but really for the last few years, I don't even know that we've even shown up on the list. So what's changed?
We haven't. Some of the national ranking polls added, and they changed their criteria for ranking schools, and they added the achievement gap. And I don't know if that's the case with U.S. News. I know it's the case with Newsweek. And so we do have a large achievement gap between our minority students and our Caucasian students, which is something we're addressing. It's been a primary goal of mine for the last 4 years. And we're making gains on that. So with the criteria changing without notice, we dropped off the radar from some of the national ranking polls, and we're addressing those things. And it's nice to get back on U.S. News and World Report.
All right. So what catapulted, you think, Park City to number 2?
Our achievement. Each year for the last 5 years, our AP test taken has gone up. Quite a bit, and I think that's the key factor for us. And the pass rate has gone up, so it's a tribute to the success of our teachers teaching those AP classes.
Okay, and the numbers I read is that we've got 75% of the students taking an AP test?
75% of our students, I don't think it's 75% of our students taking tests, but there's students taking numerous tests, which equates to about 75% of the population. And I do want to say it's a nice accolade for the high school, but the credit really belongs to our 4 elementary schools, Preparing Kids, Ecker Hill, Treasure Mountain. The success should be shared among the entire district, not just the high school.
Yeah. And then so of that 75% of those taking the AP test, the passing rate is 73%. So that's pretty impressive. Yeah.
That is impressive. Our kids are doing very well.
Now this compares, because I was looking up at the report, to a charter school. It's called Basis Scottsdale. We know that Scottsdale, of course, a very wealthy neighborhood. They're number 1 in the rankings. They had AP testing scores of 96%. Passing, so with 100%, and that, again, doesn't mean that 100% of the student body is taking tests.
I know there's schools across the country. I'm familiar with one in Oregon that it's a requirement for students to take an AP test, and if that's a charter school in Scottsdale, they may have that expectation going in. I'm going to take 3 or 4 or 5 AP classes each year.
Yeah, yeah. But they also look at is proficiency in both mathematics and English here in Park City are math proficiency 56%. So that doesn't sound great. What does that mean?
It doesn't sound great. But if you look at the scores of some schools that are top in Utah, it's much lower than that. And they're testing A grade level. And some kids take those state and ACT assessments seriously. Some kids don't. And so I think that's why that pass rate is where it is, or proficiency rate is where it is. But again, it's one of the highest in the state.
Wow. And again, what does that mean that in terms of what a high school student is expected to know, 56 of them are doing well?
Deemed proficient. There's another category, near proficient, where those kids are approaching that bar, and they have a couple of years still to go to get proficient.
All right. And then in terms of the English proficiency, we actually do a little bit better. That's up to 65%, and that's just because English is easier
is that English
to most
or math?
That's
is that
English. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we should do well there.
Yeah. They also look at graduation rates, 95% Park City High School. How come we don't have 100%?
Well, that's calculated between the time a ninth grade student enrolls in high school and their senior year. So we have kids that move in and start as a ninth grader and may leave and move somewhere else out of the country. Sometimes the polls track those kids. The school is supposed to track those kids, but it's really hard. And we have some kids that choose not to continue and pursue a GED, which is the best option for those students.
Mm-hmm. So that doesn't count. Anybody getting a GED doesn't count towards that graduation.
No.
Right? It's different.
Correct.
Mm, okay. And then, I mean, how many students? You've got, what, about 450 seniors every year?
I think it's 434.
Yeah. And so how many of those then would not graduate this year? I mean, are we talking 2, 10?
I can't put a number on each class, but, you know, it's right around 10 to 15 kids. We have a number of kids that need to finish an online class. That's always the case this time of year, and so it's nerve-wracking. That number is much higher right now, but those kids usually come through and finish what they need to do.
All right. So, again, Park City High School also named in the top 500 of the high schools in the country. I think we were at number 418. Again, this is based on the same criteria.
Yes, it is. And that criteria, I think, for U.S. News has remained the same. I remember the first year the rankings came out in 1998, and we were ranked number 97 in the country. And when the criteria was made known to high schools across the country, a lot of high schools adapted to meet that criteria, which I think is why we've fallen from the top 100. We haven't changed what we're doing. We're encouraging AP tests, but making the rankings is not our primary goal. We're hoping to provide an excellent opportunity for an education for all of our kids and not cater to the ranking polls criteria.
Yeah. Where are we with regard to testing? Because, again, that's, I think, one of the teachers' biggest complaints is too much testing.
There is a lot of testing. I think the Galileo testing that we're using in a school district is valuable because we take a pretest in the beginning of the year and an end-of-year test, and we can measure growth with that test. I think the state has made a huge mistake by making an opt-out option for students on the SAGE test. And with 75% of our students taking an AP exam, they opt out of that SAGE test, which is the reason we went from an A grade, according to the state, to a C grade, because our top kids are not going near the SAGE.
Mm, interesting. So I know that you had kind of referenced to it the achievement gap, and this is what, based on not necessarily just our English language learners, but special ed students as well, right?
Are special they kind of ed as well, and free and reduced lunch students as well. And we're addressing all three of those areas. We've put some summer school options in place for those kids. We have some interventions during the school day on a daily basis for a lot of those kids, and we're starting to see huge results from that.
Okay. So we could see these scores actually improve then, huh?
We could, but as I said, our primary goal is to provide an opportunity for all kids, and if we benefit by going up in the rankings, so be it.
Okay. What are you hearing from your senior class this year? I mean, where are they taking off to?
We have kids going coast to coast again, as usual. We just started to put up the College Board last week, and we have some kids going to Penn. We have some kids going to Yale, Dartmouth. I've heard a couple at USC, and, of course, the U is a great school, and I think 60% of our students stay in state.
Yeah, well, we know why.
Yes.
Anything else you wanted to say to us about the—
I can't stress enough how it's a district accomplishment, and it's not just the high school.
Okay. Hey, Bob, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
826 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour on KPCW. Well, the Park City Council met yesterday with a number of items on the agenda. In the studio to recap, I have Councilmember Becca Gerber. Joining her, I also have Wendy Fisher, Director of Utah Open Lands, who's got an update with regard to Bonanza Flat. Good morning to both of you, ladies.
Good morning. Good morning, Leslie.
So let's start with you, Wendy. Where are we at?
Well, we are a little under 2.9 at this point. We have over $650,000 in pending requests out there that we feel very good about. And we also have a request out to a national foundation. We've been talking with Salt Lake County Council members, trying to get it back on the agenda to see if we can get them to participate. And then we have a couple of events that are coming up, one of them being on May 12th. We will be with the Heber Railroad, and we'll be trying to match the Wasatch County $25,000 and maybe even triple it.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the Wasatch County contribution.
Sure.
Because basically there were some strings attached to that. One of them is that they want to have some say in how the conservation easement is crafted. That's going to be left to you or Becca, do we know that Utah Open Lands is the one that's going to be doing the conservation easement?
You know, I'll let Wendy talk through this one.
So, you know, first and foremost, I want to make sure that we don't get caught up in what sometimes I think can just be rhetoric of kind of these conversations that take place. I think everybody has questions about what's going to take place on Bonanza Flat. And the bottom line is this, Park City, Utah Open Lands, those of us who are involved in this, we are not going to shortchange the process of inventorying what's up there and making a decision that is going to be in perpetuity. I know that there have been uses on the land. You know, you can talk about, hey, 30 years ago, this, that, and the other. We are going to be talking about preserving this land in perpetuity. And forever is a long time. So we feel that, you know, that's something that is very clear to everyone. If you are contributing to Bonanza Flat, you're contributing to its preservation as opposed to seeing it developed.
Yeah, we pulled up the bond language, and what that bond language says is to acquire, improve, and forever preserve open space, park, and recreational land. And it also says that the purpose of the city's purchase is to, quote, protect the conservation values thereof, to remove existing unneeded man-made improvements, and to make limited improvements for public access, parking, and use. So that's wide open, but I mean, when you start talking about unneeded man-made improvements, what is that? Roads?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that can definitely, you know, you look at Jeep trails, those sorts of things. We saw that, for example, in Round Valley, working with Park City on Stone Ridge. There were a lot of Jeep trails, and they didn't really make good trails. So what has happened with the help of the Mountain Trails Foundation is we've been able to actually reclaim some of those man-made improvements that aren't necessary. And when you're not developing a piece of property, you don't need them.
All right. And then when we talk about limited improvements for public access, that would be like parking lots and the such, trailheads, things like that?
Yeah, I think everybody who has gone and done the Wasatch Crest Trail recognizes that when you park on the road there, it creates a dangerous situation, potentially for you, your vehicle, and, you know, others that need to get by. If there's a fire incident or something like that, that's an issue. So definitely with every single piece of open space that gets purchased, that changes the whole game in terms of what the vision for that property is. The vision is no longer development. The vision is preservation. And trailheads, that's going to be something that is necessary to ensure that we have safe, and appropriate access so that we don't destroy the conservation values. That's a big part of coming up with a management plan for the property.
And Park City has said that it intends to keep the seasonal access to Brighton Estates. And basically what that means, that without any kind of parking lot below the winter gate that's put up for those who decide to plow the road beyond that living in Brighton Estates, I mean, there would be no way for, say, myself to park and access the property during the winter. Could that change as well?
I think that there are a number of factors and inputs that are going to go into that. Do you create some sort of shuttle system because we want to lower our carbon footprint? Do you create additional parking? All of those things really need to be done with an eye towards what are the recreational uses that are in balance, that are in concert with the conservation values, and how are we best going to manage the property into the future? So I would say that that is something that gets decided along the way as we look at, you know, how can we actually provide the best access for the property.
Yeah, and then back to the Wasatch County Council's strings, you know, $25,000 strings attached. I mean, they talked about, well, there should be some hunting because that's what people want. There should be some motorized use for snowmobiles and ATVs, as they put it. So when do those decisions get decided?
Well, first of all, I think that that's a huge question. Is hunting what people want? I don't know that we've necessarily heard that. We have to go through a whole process. And certainly I know the Wasatch County had those discussions. There's also misinformation out there. I know Wasatch County has talked about a conservation easement that we hold that doesn't allow hunting, and that's actually incorrect information. Also, if we're trying to protect the forest, we've actually done 3 years of study on a 13,000-acre ranch about how best to protect the aspen forest. And there are things that can be detrimental to that. And the ways in which hunting occurs is a huge issue from that perspective. So I don't think that any decision is going to be made to necessarily allow hunting on the property. I think the biggest issue that I see with the Wasatch County Council is, yes, I know they had that discussion, but what I heard in the motion was we want to have a seat at the table. And I think a lot of people want a seat at the table. But again, that doesn't mean we're going to shortchange the process. And it does mean that there are going to be compromises along the way. And everybody ought to enter into this realizing that fundamentally, if they contribute to Bonanza Flat, they're contributing to its preservation and not its development. And that's really the choice they're making.
All right. So we still have less than $2.9 million May 12th. Put that on your calendar if you want to help out. Becca, I mean, has the council had any kind of discussion about if the $2.9 million isn't raised, does the city council just pull that money out of some other fund? Because, again, we've heard over and over this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and if we don't take it, it's gone.
You know, I think that we are very confident in some of the fundraising that's going on. We are so grateful to Wendy and all that she's put done and all the work that she's put out over the past couple of months. It's been amazing. And so we're going to keep working as hard as we can in the remaining time that we have and see where we get to. And then we might have some tough decisions to make. But we're just so amazed at how far we've come and how the support of Salt Lake and Wasatch County and so many people have come in and jumped on board with this. And so it's really been a great effort overall.
Okay. Wendy, anything else you want to add?
No, I just think one of the things I'd like to say is, you know, I think, again, I actually celebrate Wasatch County coming to the table. From my perspective, I think it sends a strong message to the Salt Lake County Council. Because this has been a real coalition effort, and people are getting on board and contributing. And I really celebrate the fact that they made that decision to support it. And I have every confidence that we can work out all sorts of issues with respect to that.
All right. Well, thanks for the update. Becca, let's turn to you. In work session, City Council yesterday discussed the new public utilities and streets project. So my understanding, a couple of issues the staff wanted feedback from council on. First, the issue of where do we put the affordable housing. Council members Cindy Matsumoto and Andy Bierman not on board with the Quinn's location, feeling that it was just too remote, too isolated. Yet Rhoda Stauffer, the housing project manager, says, well, with 800 units of housing that you hope to create in the next 8 years, we need to explore every possibility. Where do you stand on this?
You know, I absolutely agree with Rhoda that we need to explore every possibility. And I think that one of the things that we talked about last night was that we weren't going to take it off the table. And there was some phasing that was included in the discussion last night. And so if we decide to move ahead and do some of the projects at Iron Horse, there's the possibility of doing housing right away at Iron Horse. And if we do a part of the project at the Quinn's facility, we can have it prepared and have the construction set up in a way where we could add the second level as we get down the road. So I don't think we're taking anything off the table. And I think that that discussion was a really great example of how all of our priorities are coming together on every project that we do when we talk about housing and net zero and really making sure that we are walking the talk with all of our critical priorities right now as we work on projects that we need to have happen in the future.
And that was the second issue, and that is that the budget of $16.5 million mm-hmm. is basically blown out of the water when you try to incorporate your net zero goal and the affordable housing. So how do the critical priorities, impact the decision-making process?
You know, it's hard. It's complicated. We have some big needs in this town as far as outdated facilities and expanding our transit and our services to the city, which are expected and needed, and trying to make sure that we provide housing for the future and stick to our net zero goals. And it's going to be hard, but I think one of the things that we are looking to is find some balance, figure out the ways that we can make these projects more affordable. And part of that, is to maybe separate some of the locations of things. But this discussion is far from over, and we are going to keep working through it and making sure that we make good decisions. The other thing that's nice is that for housing and for net zero and different parts of these projects, we're pulling from different funds. So we do have an affordable housing fund. The housing, actually, I think in this one, we were looking at doing a transit grant or some sort of transit funding. So then you start being able to pull money for these projects out of different pots, and it's not all coming from our capital improvement fund.
So in terms of the affordable housing, how many units are we even talking about, or was that even discussed?
It depends on how you set it up. If we did housing at both locations, I think it could be something 20 to 30. I think
total.
Mm-hmm. I think they were looking at 12 units out at Quinn's Junction and then maybe doing something replicable at Iron Horse. So I think it all kind of depends on the layout.
All right. So again, energy is a council critical priority. So do you go ahead and just increase the budget by 20% to meet those net zero goals?
Again, I think this discussion is far from over, is because there's always the discussion of that we got into a little bit last night of, yes, it costs more up front, but are you saving money in the long term? Is it more efficient in the long term? Can we cut our energy costs? So I think we're going to continue going through that discussion.
So then when does this come back?
I believe they're looking at it coming back within the next few weeks.
Okay. Let's see. During the regular meeting, the crane at the Kimball Art Center project got some discussion. The council agreed to let the crane stay there. I mean, were there some conditions of approval there?
This was a discussion following a discussion a couple weeks ago about why the crane was going to be located where it was and what kind of crane it was. And really, what was explained to us is that if they had used a mobile crane, which could have been taken down, it would have required a much larger footprint and actually would have required closing of the streets several times. Or I think most of the time that it was in operation. And so actually, because they're using the crane that they're using, they will be able to just have two lanes of continuous traffic flow. There will be the covered walkway, and it's much less disruptive towards the continuation of a normal city activity on a day-to-day basis. So we felt good about that decision.
So are there any time limits in terms of how long the crane can stay?
I believe it has to be down either the first or second week in November. And it's only going to be operating on weekdays between 7 a.m. and noon, and it's not going to be operating during holidays.
All right, and it has to stay on Heber Avenue?
It does. It's just going to, I think they're going to set it up and it will be in place for the summer.
Okay. I don't know if there's any paid parking there. If there was, would the applicant have to pay any lost revenues of parking?
You know, that wasn't something that we talked about last night, but I don't believe there is any paid parking in that area.
All right. Council also extended the dining decks on Main Street. Again, businesses pay a fee to be able to do this, and mm-hmm. I think that is to offset parking revenues loss, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was there an interest for more dining decks, or were we about at where we were?
We actually had one fewer than last year apply. So I think there were seven that are coming back for the season, and we're excited to have the program up and running again.
Because you require that they stay open for lunch.
Yes. It is a 7 days a week lunch through dinner.
Okay. Council also approved a $15,000 payment to the Park City Summit County Arts Council to create an arts and culture master plan. So what do taxpayers get for that expenditure?
So, you know, at the I believe it was last summer, we had a large contingency of local nonprofits arts group come to council and really ask us to do more to support arts in Park City. And so really what we're paying for right now is a comprehensive study of what's needed in Park City and where we're strong and how we can help contribute to the arts and making sure that they're, you know, we support the arts in Park City as much as we support recreation. And so we're excited for them to get through that study and to come back with us and to keep working and to support Park City as an arts and recreation community.
All right. And finally, you did hear from Andy Berman early on about who was reporting at E-Bikes on Trails, the new off-leash dog issue. Was there any discussion on that, or is that going to come back to council, or?
It will likely come back to council. We didn't really have a discussion on it. It was something that was brought up in comments and disclosures. And so we haven't really had – that was kind of the first we've heard about this extra concern about it. And so, you know, technology evolves, and it's hard for anyone to keep up with. And especially, you know, trails have been used so differently over the years, and mountain bikes have come so far. So I'm guessing that there will likely be a discussion that comes up again.
Yeah. Have you heard anything personally about the use?
You know, I haven't seen them, and the only electric bikes I've used are so heavy, I can't imagine trying to take it on a real trail, mountain bike trail. Like, even with the extra power, trying to turn one of those things through a switchback going up sounds really difficult to me. I'm sure the technology will evolve, but for right now, we're excited about our e-bike program that's coming along for transportation use and just to be able to get around town with a little bit of ease, especially with all of our hills. So I'm sure that these things will come back to us as a discussion, and we'll try to tackle it to the best of our ability.
Okay. Becca Gerber and Wendy Fisher, thanks for your time. 8:44 now. Good morning. Well, the Park City High School Boosters Club hosting its annual Big Nugget fundraiser tomorrow night at the Blind Dog. In the studio with details, I have High School Booster Club President Kayla Peregrine along with softball coach Shannon Gebbia. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So we'll let you start, Kayla, just in terms of when, where, how much?
Thanks. Well, thanks again for having us on. We're really excited this year. We're hosting it at the Blind Dog again tomorrow night, Saturday the 29th at between 5 and 9. We're really excited. Blind Dog is donating the space again for us, so it's yet another local business that's supporting us. We've grown a fair bit, and we've worked with a lot of the local businesses. This year we have over 75 items for a silent auction. And I'm happy to say that all but three were actually donated by local businesses and families. So a lot of the silent auction items that we have are going to range anywhere from $30 to $3,000. So there's a little bit of something for everyone. So it's a great way to come out and support us as a booster club and support all of our sports and activities, as well as support all our local businesses.
Yeah. So is there an entrance fee?
There is an entrance fee. It is $75. That does include beverages. I dare to say wine and beer. We don't have a limit. It also includes tapas-style appetizers, also includes sushi. So we're really excited. It's going to be a fun night. We're going to have live entertainment, live music. Right now it's looking like we're going to have two bands in addition to that as well. So.
Okay. So, Shannon, this isn't just for the athletic programs, although you represent the girls' softball team, but it's to support all of the programs, music, dance, cheerleading.
Yes, absolutely. And that's what I love about doing a huge fundraiser like this, that no one can say, well, such and such gets more, such and such gets less. And we can all come together and we put in the effort. Kayla's done a great job, as well as the rest of the Booster Club and the reps, of getting out the information to the coaches and the parents to bring participation from the kids and the families and such. So having this big fundraiser all together, we all have to put in work and we all get benefits from it equally.
Yeah. So what's the need for the softball team? I mean, where are your needs?
Oh, where to start?
Softballs.
One of the biggest things that the Booster Club from last year that's helped us with is we ordered a batting cage. Baseball has a batting cage, and we're able to use it, but it's up by their field and such. So just we've got a batting cage coming. We've got a new scoreboard out there on the way. And just big items like that the girls get to see now that other people in the community, it's not just their work. They're seeing that, you know, you're putting in the work and they want to help us out.
Okay. How is the team doing?
We're getting there. we're doing – the effort is there, and the girls, they buy into it. We have one of the toughest regions. And we play every pitch, and that's what matters. We're not getting a lot of wins just yet, but we play every pitch, and they keep their heads up.
She's done a great job getting girls out to join the team, which is a big deal.
So. Yeah, and do we still have the feeder team? I mean, years ago, my daughter, there was a softball team, but is that still ongoing?
Not that I know of. I don't live up in Park City. I'm working on that. One of the parents puts together the Silver Strikers, and they go down to Taylorsville and play. But I don't believe there's a feeder team. We are the high school is running a camp this year, and we're hoping to do more throughout the summer and just try to get girls interested and see that we're a fun group.
Yeah. Kayla, the idea was to have this one large coordinated fundraiser. We still have other fundraisers like the Sweetheart Dance. I mean, but that money would stay just for the music program?
So the Sweetheart Gala is a fund, one of the longest fundraisers within Park City High School Activities. It does go to fund a lot of the music programs, so not just a single band, but multiple music programs. We do help support the band in addition to what they do with their gala, but this really is intended to kind of grow and turn into the huge, biggest fundraiser that we have across all the high school activities. Last year, we were able to grant about $30,000. Actually, it was over $30,000 to all of the different programs that we have that included debate, drama, band, and then obviously all of the sports, football, wrestling, softball, baseball. So all of the teams all got involved. Our participation this year has been great. Our Booster Club meetings, we usually have I'd say five times as many people as we did when I started 5 years ago. So it's pretty big, regular attendance. One of the things that we're introducing this year as a part of the Big Nugget is a wish list where our coaches and our teachers can actually come up with a list of items that they would like to see if a local donor would be willing to fund. So softball, I think, had some softball jerseys that we're worth a couple $100s, and so we have that on our wish list, and we're looking for donors there as well.
Great. So what we kind of had got to get rid of doing this is the cookie dough sales and the chocolate bar sales.
Yeah, that in talking to most of the coaches, that's by and large gone away. Not completely, but for the most part, it's definitely reduced. Football has revamped the way that they're doing their fundraising as a result. Wrestling's absolutely changed the way that they do their fundraising. Softball as well. So it really has reduced the burden on the kids going out and knocking door to door on the same doors three or four times a year, because we are able to fund, larger dollar amounts for each of the teams.
All right. So is there something online that if people aren't going to come to the celebration, the party, that they can still maybe contribute to girls' jerseys?
Absolutely. So if they go to parkcityminors.us is the high school website, go to the boosters page. There's actually two links that are available. One is for our tickets for the event tomorrow night, but there's also another one that will take you to the silent auction. And our silent auction is actually open till midnight tonight. Everything in our silent auction will transition over to live auction tomorrow. And then we will at some point also include all of our wish list items available online. So that way, over the course of the summer and throughout the school year next year, people will be able to contribute to that as well.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, just come on out and see a game if you want. We've got four home games, May 8th through 12th, and we'll be having some fun out there.
Okay. High school field there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hey, Shannon, Kayla, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
The 2017 Young Riders Bike Swap will be held May 13th and 14th. In the studio with details, I have the Executive Director of Young Riders, Heinrich Dieters. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's talk. You're doing something a little bit different this year, or maybe I just wasn't paying attention last year, allowing people to kind of to check in their gear from their home.
Yeah, no, great. Thanks for bringing that up. It's definitely something we want to focus on this year. Everything can be found if there was something to remember. There's a lot of dates, et cetera. You can just go to youngriders.com. There's a drop down for Bike Swap, and all the information is there. But what we're offering this year, a couple years back, myself and Julie, my wife, worked with Twio, which is a company software app development down in Salt Lake, to provide an app for Bike Swap specifically, because it can be kind of hectic and confusing if you've been to the Ski Swap and our swap. But what that allows us this year is you can actually check in online. So you can at home, you can click on the, and there's a step-by-step. It shows you how to do it. You create a user login, et cetera, and stuff. And then you can log in your information and you can take pictures, et cetera, and things like that. And basically you create an account. And then when you come to drop it off, Basically, you're in the system. You can print out the tags. They go on the merchandise, and then it goes into the swap. So it takes the check-in process from, say, a half an hour, 30, 45 minutes or something like that, to like 10 minutes, hopefully. And so if you're checking in information, or I mean, bikes, et cetera, on like that Friday evening before the swap, it's usually very busy. And so that's one complaint we've gotten, is it's pretty arduous to get through that. So hopefully we'll have a lot of people check in online, and then they'll be able to just show up, and it's almost like an express check-in, and then their information's there. The second part of that, which is important, is then online you can track when things sell. So as soon as something sells at the swap, you get an email notification, you know, bike, large, Trek, whatever sold for this amount. So you can basically sit at home or in Moab or something like that and be like, wow, I just sold my $2,000 bike. So, you know, that helps with the communication, et cetera, on that aspect.
Yeah. So people can do that now already?
So they can start right now, yes. My wife, Julie, had it all set up last night. We did the final debugging last night. So it's all ready to go. And so we would encourage people to do that. If you don't want to do it online, though, you can go to White Pine or Jan's and drop off bikes starting this Saturday all the way through May 10th. And so that's the same service. They'll actually have the iPads there. They do the same check-in and stuff like that right there on the shop.
So where are they putting all the stuff?
That's always our biggest issue. So they take it in, and what we do is we get two U-Haul, big U-Haul vans, and we park it one at White Pine and one at Jan's. And they fill up their areas, and then they put them in the U-Haul. There's also the old Young Riders trailer there and things like that. And then on the 9th or 10th, I actually start taking them over to the yard, and we put them in there in a secured area.
And that's the sale itself. Again, will be that Saturday and Sunday at the yard, kicking off Saturday morning at 8. People lining up at 6?
Yeah, some people get there, you know, 5:30, 6 o'clock, and then I would say probably by 6:45, 7, there's probably 40 or 50 people in line, and then you know, by 8 o'clock, there's probably a couple hundred people in line. And so every year I do it a little bit. You know, I let those first 10, 20 people, I let them in the door at 8, and I don't let anybody else in for a little bit and give them that opportunity. They got there early. They can go find their bike that they wanted, go get in line, and then I let about 25 and just slowly let the people in.
Yeah, so since you've got people checking in earlier, is there a way then for me to see what's might be for sale, whether or not I show up early or not?
So unfortunately, there's not that sort of online, but we do welcome people Thursday and Friday night to kind of mingle around, you know, from, you know, it's usually about a 5 to 8 p.m. But at that point, I walk through and I got to kick everybody out so we can arrange everything and certain places. But yeah, we welcome people to walk around and see if they can find something so they know if they need to get up at 5:30 in the morning.
All right. So besides bikes, what else will you accept?
So road and mountain bikes, and then anything, you know, cycling related. So we get everything from the chariots for the parents. Those were always very, very popular. Racks, you know, even the Thule boxes up top. We've had over the last couple of years a lot of reps come in, and they bring helmets and attire, and I mean, you name it. So it's in there. You know, really our lacking point is just the space. We fill it up just to the brim. And good thing is we do 70% of our sales between 8 a.m. and probably 11 a.m. And so the place clears out pretty quickly, and then we can space stuff out a little bit more.
Yeah. So do you accept used clothing?
Do we accept these? We do. I made a joke on Randy's show last night. We always get stuff from John Haney and some of the people in town who bring some of their older gear. I would even say that I've bought some of the old jerseys from the Park City Cycling Club in like 1989 just for memorabilia. So, yeah, we pretty much accept anything. We just ask that it's in good working condition, you know, and it's if you're going to sell something memorabilia and it's used, like wash it if you don't mind and things like that.
Yeah, but not used helmets.
Not used helmets. No, that's not something that we actually take.
Okay. Let's see. We'll bring you back closer to the date and let people know about dates, times. But now this is the check-in call.
Yeah, so I'll be back on, like I said, right before the swap. But this is really, you know, if you want to drop off to sell a bike or some materials, you can do so at Jan's or White Pine. from this Saturday all the way to May 10th, and that's during their store hours. There's people there to help you price, log it in, or you could use the other option where you could actually do it online from home. There is a link that you can actually email Julie, and she can help you out with that as well. So, but that's a pretty nifty sort of way to do it, and we've actually found that if people do it at home, they're more willing to put more stuff in the swap, actually.
Okay. Hey, Heinrich, thanks for coming in.
Okay, thanks so much.